was long gone. When they were back in the kitchen, coffee brewing and open jars of honey out on the table, Britta asked, "Are you going to tell Charlie?"
"I don't hide anything from Charlie. I just delay. So let her have her night with Berg, and we'll tell her in the morning."
"She's gonna be mad, huh?"
"When it comes to my father, Charlie always ends up mad. Not because she's irrational, but because he's an asshole."
"What do you think he really wanted?"
"I have no idea. But the good news is, although it has to do with Stevie, it's not Stevie herself. Honestly, that's the first bit of good news we've gotten in a long time."
Britta ran her finger over the rim of her still empty mug. "Are you guys going to run?"
"No," Stevie said from the kitchen doorway. "Go back to bed, Stevie," Max said gently. "I'm up now."
Stevie walked over to the double coffee maker, pulling off one of the carafes and coming back to the kitchen table. She filled up Britta's and Max's cups before getting her own from the cabinet and pouring coffee for herself. Once she put the carafe back, she asked, "When did we get a coffee maker?"
"I think that's from Mrs. Fitzbear," Britta offered. "A thank you for the cinnamon buns."
Stevie sat down at the table, across from her sister.
"We're not running," Stevie told Max. "I'm tired of running. Besides," she added, "Charlie's happy here."
She thought a moment.
"I'm happy here."
Another pause.
"Kyle's happy here, and he's not happy anywhere."
"You do know we can't adopt that kid, right?" Max asked.
"Of course we can't. He already has a family that loves him. He just makes them insane, so they need a break from him. I'm happy to help."
She peeked up at Max. "Do you want to run?"
"Me?" Max grinned. "I'm a honey badger, bitch. I want to stand my ground and beat the fuck out of anybody who crosses my path. But if something happened to you..."
"Nothing is going to happen to me. I've got you and Charlie." She leaned in a bit and, after glancing at Britta, she whispered,
"And I'm surrounded by man-eating bears."
"Says the man-eating tiger." Eyes narrowing on Britta, Stevie barked,
"Stop freaking me out with that!"
Chapter 30 Berg was quickly learning that the pleasure of waking up with the woman of his dreams asleep on his chest did not come without a price. He knew that the second his bedroom door slammed open and a honey badger came into the room to turn on the TV and announce, "We have a problem." Charlie didn't even lift her head from Berg's chest.
"Dad?"
"Surprisingly, no." Max grabbed a remote from the top of the chest of drawers and began changing channels. Stevie ran in and jumped onto the end of the bed.
"Wow, this is the biggest bed I've ever seen. How fun!"
She looked back at them, grinning.
"You two are so cute. Here it is."
Max stepped back from the TV, and Charlie sat up, not really bothering to cover her breasts. Berg wasn't sure if this was a sister thing. He and his siblings might be triplets, but with one girl and two males, they had definite boundaries. But when his own sister walked into the room, followed by Dag, Berg yanked the sheet up to cover her. When the McKilligan sisters laughed, he had no idea how to respond.
"Aw, he's shy," Max said.
"Yeah," Stevie chimed in. "I'm easily panicked and terrified, but I'm not shy. And Charlie's definitely not shy."
"My mother said that when I was a baby, I used to snatch off my diaper and wiggle my ass."
"Maybe it's because you can't shift," Max guessed. "Instead of being covered in fur and hunting, you run around naked, wiggling your ass."
Berg pressed the palm of his hand against his eyes and asked,
"Didn't you want us to see something?"
"Oh, yeah." Max glanced at the remote. "Oh, good. I can rewind."
She rewound the local news story and stepped back so Berg and Charlie could easily see.
"Police say the Ring of Life Jewelry Emporium was hit this morning between midnight and 4 a.m. Thieves opened a hole beneath the store and went into the vault, stealing millions of dollars worth of diamonds, gold, and other gems."
Charlie gestured to the TV and yawned.
"Did Dad do this?"
"No. And we know this because Dad was in Stevie's bedroom last night when it was happening."
Dag suddenly raised his hand, but before he could say anything, Stevie clarified with,
"He was just snooping for something among my books."
She shrugged.
Of all the horrible things there is to say about our father, what you're concerned about is, thankfully, not one of them.
Nodding, Dag pulled his arm back and said,
I just needed to know before we kept going.
Charlie, whom Berg was starting to realize liked to talk with her hands, raised her forefinger and said,
Putting aside the issue of our father, she moved her forefinger to the right to illustrate, what does this heist have to do with us?
Max smirked.
Carrie's polar bear? It's his store, on 47th, the one he took her to yesterday.
But her bachelorette party was last night, right? Which, again, we were not invited to, Stevie muttered.
But all the cousins were, Max said. All McKilligans, all honey badgers, all
thieves, Charlie finished.
She wasn't having an affair with that bear. She was setting his ass up.
That doesn't mean she wasn't having an affair, Max reasoned. But I doubt she was really planning to end her upcoming marriage for him.
What if he knows? Stevie asked. What if he knows that she set him up?
Then he'll come to ruin Carrie's wedding and demand his ship back, Max guessed.
There was silence on that, and after nearly a minute, Charlie forced her eyes wide open, shook her head, and announced,
All right, we need to move,
quickly.
Suddenly, this wedding day,
that we were originally not invited to,
you need to let it go, Max admonished Stevie, has gotten a new sense of urgency. Everybody know what they're doing? She asked the room.
When everyone nodded, good. Charlie threw off the sheet, and Britta and Dag quickly left the room. Max and Stevie followed, but with no real sense of urgency.
What about your father?
Berg asked Charlie.
What about him?
What does he want?
I have no idea. We have our money secured, under different names, and scattered over the globe in different accounts or safety deposit boxes in cash, just because of our father. The only thing Stevie has that could possibly be important to him, or anyone, that Freddie could actually get to, is what she has in her head.
Do you think they were trying to take her because of something they think she has?
It's possible. Who knows what my father told the Weras? What he's convinced himself Stevie has in her notebooks that he must get his hands on because it'll give him everything he's ever wanted.
She pointed at her own head. He's stupid.
Do you think he'll really show up today?
An event with a lot of rich people drinking and showing off their expensive jewelry? And he's desperate and out of control? What do you think?
They arrived about an hour before the nuptials. The Duns were sent off to meet up with the security forces Bernice and her wedding planner had already arranged for, while Charlie and her sisters went to find their cousins. Before walking away, Berg grabbed Charlie's hand, smiled at her.
You look great in that dress.
Enjoy it while it lasts. I'm not big on wearing dresses. Too limiting.
I may know fashion, but I do not abide by fashion.
I don't know what that means.
She tugged on his hand until he leaned down a bit so she could kiss him. When she pulled away, brushing her hand against his jaw, she said,
I know you don't, and I'm learning to find that charming.
Grinning wide and shaking his head, Berg followed after his siblings. Charlie caught up with her sisters by the elevators. They got in, pushed the button for the correct floor, and as soon as the doors closed, Stevie suddenly announced,
I sent my resignation to CERN.
Shocked, Charlie gawked at her baby sister.
You did what?
Stevie let out a sigh. Do I really have to say it again? Because nothing annoys me more than someone who says what, but they actually heard fine, and all they really need is a moment to gather their thoughts.
Charlie shook her head and barked, What?
I gave my notice.
Why?
I thought we should stay.
Where?
Here.
Charlie looked around.
In the Kingston Arms?
Dude, we can't afford this.
Oh, my God, Stevie snapped.
Chuckling, Max offered, I think, Charlie, she's talking about staying in New York. Most likely the Queen's abode we are currently living in.
Why would we do that?
Max sighed.
Gee, I don't know. Maybe because you're in love with that mountain of a man you just soul-kissed in the middle of a hotel hallway. We've never seen you do that before.
Look, I appreciate that you guys are happy that I am...
She searched for the right words. Finding romance. Max couldn't even hold back a snort, and Charlie glared at her until she looked away, something she didn't do with anyone else. But your career, Charlie said to Stevie, is more important than whether I get laid.
My career? Stevie asked, stepping out of the elevator now that the doors were open. What does CERN have to do with my career?
I don't know, Charlie replied, glancing at an equally confused but less caring Max. Everything? Stevie's back suddenly straightened and her chin jerked up a notch.
You think that my brilliance,
uh-oh, Max warned, is due to where I lay my hat?
You don't wear hats, Max unhelpfully pointed out.
Shut up, Stevie snapped before refocusing on Charlie.
Do you?
Of course not, Charlie said quickly. But I've always thought that, Max blinked when she noticed that Charlie had turned toward her.
What are you looking at me for? I don't know how to help you out of this.
I just assumed it was, helpful for your career.
You know what helps my career? Stevie asked.
Me.
Not to sound smug, but it's all about me. My brilliance, my skills, my ability to think beyond the plebes of this universe.
Wow, Max burst out. Hanging with Kyle has brought out an interesting side of you.
Kyle is a child. He has years to realize how amazing he is. I, however, already know.
Dude, you're 23.
I'm 24, but that's not the point. You peons, Charlie suggested.
Yes, peons. I love you both, and I appreciate your protection and absolutely everything you've done for me.
But, Max pushed, but my career is my own. And if you think that CERN...
We don't think that CERN defines you, Charlie quickly told her. I know it has not made you who you are, but I thought it was a good fit for you because you mostly got along with the staff. You got to do whatever you wanted, when you wanted, and they paid for your weird mental health facility obsession.
Stevie shrugged. Bluntly, I can get that anywhere. I can get any job, anywhere I want in the universe. I've got Silicon Valley coming at me. I've got universities from all over the globe coming at me. I'm a girl and I'm smart, and I've got two sisters who are women of color. I'm their diversity wet dream. So I don't need to lock myself into anything. You two, however...
What about us? Max asked, sounding indignant for the first time.
Not to be rude, but if either of you find a man, you need to hold that man.
What the fuck does that mean? Max demanded.
Yeah, Charlie chimed in. What the fuck does that mean? It's that you need me to explain that hurts.
Stevie!
What? Do you think just any guy would be okay with your sisters bursting into his bedroom to discuss the thievery of other family members? No. But Berg puts up with it because he loves you and he's already a triplet. He gets siblings. He'll understand if you need to take off for Norway because Dad has done...
She sighed.
Something stupid, and you have to fix it before one of us goes to jail for his fuck-up. He'll be okay with you having weaponry around the entire house. He won't like it, but he'll be okay with it. He won't freak out when he finds me and Max hanging out in his cabinets eating his honey.
You don't like honey, Charlie pointed out.
No, but I really like living in cabinets. And I have to say that my co-workers at CERN, they all thought that was a little weird. But not here. For once, do you guys realize we're not the weirdest people in the group? I mean, did you see there was a guy with a lion's mane doing the cha-cha at our party with his wolf girlfriend? And we were playing tech music at the time. Or have you noticed that Kyle has a bodyguard that eats bamboo all the time? Or perhaps you've spotted Dag in our backyard doing his full-body back scratch on that big oak tree. He was human at the time. He could have just used a back scratcher. But no.
She circled her forefinger in the air to signify each of them.
Not the weirdest. I say we revel in that and see what we can make of it.
Max smirked. And you're okay staying on a street with nothing but, as you call them, man-eating bears?
As long as Charlie keeps giving them baked goods, we should be fine.
Charlie tossed her arms in the air. So now I'm beholden to Bake all the time for demanding bears?
You can't give wild animals food and then take it away.
Stevie pointed a finger at Charlie and snarled through gritted teeth.
So if that means you need to bake, bitch, bake.
Max started to laugh, but the sound suddenly cut off and her eyes narrowed as she focused down the hall. Charlie looked over her shoulder but didn't see anything.
What? I saw Dad.
Charlie didn't question whether her sister had really seen their father. She knew she had. Go, she ordered Max, then pointed at Stevie. Tell security Dad's here. I'll talk to the bride.
Stevie cringed. Good luck with that.
Max ran down one hall, then another, searching for her father. She caught his scent when she started past the stairs. Her father wasn't using bear spray this time to disguise his scent. Just a cheap knockoff Paco Rabanne cologne that he'd probably picked up from a street vendor in Chinatown. Idiot. She ran into the stairwell and started up the stairs. She'd just gotten two floors up when she caught the scent of another honey badger behind her. Not her father, but a female. Max turned just in time to watch a steel pipe collide with her head. Deanne buried her knife into the man's side, a brutal thrust between ribs. She dropped his body and stepped over him to move around the office, examining everything. But they were gone. She knew it. Malone came out of the hangar office.
They're gone, she said, proving Deanne right.
I know. We're too late.
The jet is still here, though.
They're like bazillionaires. They could have 10 jets like that one.
Did you look at that thing?
We are so absconding with it. Right now, you just want to drive it off the tarmac? Malone laughed and motioned to the two teams they'd brought with them, one from Katzenhaus, one from the group. She motioned to the bodies.
Get this cleaned up, she ordered before coming over to Dee's side.
Now what? We put out the word to our contacts. Try to track the two bitches down.
3 bitches, Malone corrected.
The Wera twins and that honey badger.
She's our problem, too.
It sounds like it. Word is, she's rabid.
Literally?
Malone sighed.
No.
Well, don't get that tone. You weren't being clear.
What I mean is that she's like one of those tigers that sneak into a village in India and start killing everybody but not eating them. She's what we don't need out in the world representing our kind.
Charlie walked into the hotel room where Carrie was about to be helped into her gown. The room was filled with flowers and bridesmaids. There was girlish giggling and open bottles of champagne. There were also 3 photographers moving around the bride while Max's cousin Livy stood off to the side. She had her own camera hanging from her shoulder, but she didn't seem too interested in taking any pictures.
"Why are you here?"
Charlie asked her, still holding the hotel door open.
"They're paying me a shit ton of money to choose and oversee the photographers and videographer handling the wedding. This is how low I've sunk as an artist."
"Don't worry, Liv. You're about to see something really interesting."
The badger raised a brow just as Charlie slammed the hotel door with as much strength as she could. So hard she might have damaged the doorframe itself from the force. Everyone in the room faced her, and she asked,
"So which of you crazy cunts were involved in the jewelry heist last night?"
Livy rubbed her nose, hiding her smile behind her hand, before she got control and motioned to the photographers and videographer to get out of the room with a wave of her finger. It took a little effort for them to pull the door back open after Charlie had closed it, though. Once they were gone, Charlie focused on the bride and her cousins again.
"Well?"
"What are you talking about?"
Bernice asked.
"Carrie had her bachelorette party last night."
"Nope. She went a-stealin' last night."
Kenzie dropped the wedding dress to the floor and demanded,
"Is that why you kept giving me that black mamba-infused vodka last night, so that I'd pass out?"
"It's not like you would have come with us,"
Carrie explained to her sister.
"You're such a drag about everything."
"Wait,"
Bernice peered at her youngest daughter.
"You mean this is true?"
"Did you really think all we would do was go see a bunch of strippers and drink? What are we, full human?"
"You
insolent little...
The heist isn't the big problem, Charlie cut in. It's who she stole from.
Why? Who did she steal from?
You going to tell her? Charlie pushed her cousin.
You're doing such a nice job and all.
The polar bear. He wasn't her boyfriend. He was her mark.
You thought he was my boyfriend?
Carrie sneered.
I'm about to marry Ronald P. Farmington IV. Do you think I'd really risk that for a bear?
Charlie looked at Livy, and at that point her sister's cousin just laughed out loud. The bear you're talking about, Charlie explained, is a dangerous scumbag, a loan shark, a mobster. If you think he won't figure out,
I already sent him an I love you text this morning, and by tomorrow I'll be on my honeymoon, so...
Bernice had her hands wrapped around her daughter's neck, attempting to wring the life from her. Charlie watched impassively as the cousins and Carrie's sisters tried to pry Carrie's mother off her throat. When they finally pinned Bernice to a chair, she screamed,
"You are the worst daughter ever!"
It was a flawless heist. The cops will have nothing.
The cops are the least of your worries, Charlie told Carrie. I mean, does your husband even know you're a criminal?
How can I be a criminal, Carrie asked, when I've never been caught?
Bernice was almost out of the chair again, but one of the huskier cousins literally sat on her to keep her down. Anyway, Charlie continued, the additional security I employed is already on it. But there are a lot of exits and entrances in this hotel, and he is a shifter, so regular hotel security won't notice a polar bear the way they would if we were talking about a full human. And there's one other thing. Max saw Freddy about 2 minutes ago. Bernice shoved her niece off her lap, tossing her across the room, and stood.
What?
She exploded. Max is already on it, and so is the additional security.
If you need to, Bernice said, pointing at Charlie, you have my permission to kill him.
Good to know. Anyway, I strongly suggest we get these nuptials going as quickly as possible. And I also strongly suggest that after the I do's are said, cousin, she looked directly at Carrie, you drag that new husband of yours off to a closet somewhere and fuck his brains out. It'll be harder for him to annul this sham of a marriage if you've already fucked after the ceremony. She spread her arms out. Are we all clear? Great. She winked at Livy and walked out, leaving a room full of screaming honey badgers throwing expensive glass things around in her wake. As Charlie moved down the hall, she heard the room door open and looked over her shoulder to see Livy sticking her head out, her team of photographers standing by. Charlie, she called out.
Yeah?
Livy smiled, tears in her eyes.
I love you.
Grinning, Charlie replied, I know you do. Laughing, Livy motioned her team in. Let's go, people. We have lifelong memories to photograph. Chapter 31 Max woke up as her body was dragged down some hallway. She opened her eyes to see pipes over her head. She was in the hotel basement, or at least that's what she was assuming. Hotels like this didn't have unattractive things such as plumbing on floors with guest rooms. That would be tacky. A full human male dragged her into a room. Here, he said. Max didn't know, though, to whom he was speaking. She'd closed her eyes to maintain the illusion she was still out cold.
Where is our little friend?
She went to find a notebook.
Ah, that's what they wanted from Stevie. One of the notebooks she obsessively wrote in.
Max had no idea what her sister put into those books, but she'd always assumed if it wasn't music, it was probably some amazing Leonardo da Vinci-style prototype that would change the world. The Wera twins were the kind who could easily afford to make any of Stevie's ideas into reality with all the money and connections they had. Of course, for Max, there was another question. Was Freddy also trying to get Stevie's notebook for himself? Or was he still working for the twins?
Hello, niece, a female voice said above Max. We know you are awake.
Max opened her eyes and gazed up at one of the women she'd seen in the Vanity Fair article.
"It's so nice to meet the family, is it not?" she asked with an Italian accent. An accent Max normally found sexy, from a man trying to pick her up in a Rome bar, not on some broad holding a 45 aimed at Max's head. The mirror image of the woman standing over her stepped to Max's side. "So nice to meet family, although we must admit you do not look like a McKilligan, but your father assured us that you are." "Your father," said the other, "has been so helpful. He just can't do enough for us." "He specifically told us to take you. He said, what was it, Rena? He said to take the Chinese one, Tina. That would keep the others from doing something stupid." "Wasn't that helpful?" Actually, it wasn't helpful. Not to Max's enemies. Unlike her sisters, anxiety and reason did not rule Max McKilligan. Insanity did. And her father knew that. For once, he'd done something right. "My sisters would never put me at risk," Max admitted. "That's kind of my job." The one crouching over her, the one who was probably Rena, narrowed her eyes on Max. Max smiled. Grinned, really. A big, wide one. Then she unleashed her claws, reached up, and slashed Rena across the face from her jaw to her forehead. Screaming, Rena fell to the floor, and Max rolled backward until she was able to get to her feet. Tina fired her weapon, and Max turned. The bullets rammed her in the back, two hitting close to her spine. But because they didn't actually touch it, she was able to grab the male who rushed into the room, his gun drawn. Max caught his wrist and twisted until she broke it. She yanked him close, using his body to protect her from more bullets, letting her aunt shoot her gun dry. When she went to reload, Max threw the now-dead male across the room, knocking her aunt to the ground. The other twin sat on the floor, screaming and crying, blood pouring, flesh hanging off her skull. But Tina struggled up from under her body.
"Kill her!"
Rena ordered her sister in Italian. An Italian phrase Max had learned long ago.
"Kill the bitch!"
Max raised her blood-drenched claws and unleashed her fangs. She jerked her entire body forward and hissed. Tina, without thought, hissed back, and her claws suddenly burst from her fingers. Fangs dropped from her gums. Shocked, she and her twin gazed at the abrupt change in, well, everything. Max grinned.
"Welcome to the family, Auntie,"
she told the females before she charged Tina. She was almost on her when the door was kicked open and more armed men came in. Max ripped a line down the skirt of her gown and yanked a blade out of one of the holsters tied to her thigh. She threw it, and it slammed into the throat of the first man entering the room. He fell back into the men behind him, and Max punched Tina in the face before jumping up onto a nearby desk, ripping out the grate over an air duct and crawling inside. Bullets riddled the tiny shaft as Max crawled her way down to the first exit she could find. Charlie was standing near the room where the ceremony would take place. The wedding planner was asking everyone to take their seats because the ceremony was about to begin. The guests showing surprise that a wedding ceremony was about to take place on time. The music started and the full human groomsmen began to line up, waiting to make their way down the aisle. "You guys ready?" Charlie asked with a false smile. "Then let's go, let's go, let's go."
"Is there a problem?" the groom asked her.
"No, of course not. The bride is just excited to start her new life with you." With an annoyed snarl, the wedding planner pushed Charlie away from the groomsmen.
"All right, gentlemen," the she-tiger said, a headset firmly in place, an iPad desperately clutched in her hand. "You remember what to do. And smile, everyone. Smile."
As the men started to go, the she-tiger turned on Charlie.
"What are you doing?"
"Trying to get this thing moving."
"It's a wedding, not a business meeting."
"You can't be in that much denial." Charlie jerked to the side so she could see over the taller woman's shoulder. Her father had crept out of a room where the bridesmaids and groomsmen were allowed to store their stuff during the ceremony, and he now held Stevie's backpack. Even worse, when he saw his eldest daughter, he ran. He ran. "Get this thing moving," Charlie ordered the she-tiger, before she lifted up the skirt of her gown and took off after her old man.
Stevie came around the corner in time to hear Here Comes the Bride, played rather poorly, in her opinion, by the string quartet. She waited until her cousin started off down the aisle to let out a relieved sigh.
Hey,
Dutch said, coming up behind her in a perfectly tailored suit. Thankfully, not a tux.
Everything going okay?
Doubtful. Stevie faced him. But Carrie's heading off down the aisle, so I think she's ahead of the... Oh, shit.
What?
Dutch looked over his shoulder, and he immediately begged,
Please tell me they're not our problem.
They're our problem.
There were 10 of them. 10 polar bears. A few 7, others maybe 8 feet tall. And all Stevie wanted to do was run. She wanted to run and never look back. But she couldn't. She'd made a commitment, and she didn't have time to dash off a letter of resignation to her sisters.
Look, Dutch said, I'll distract them. You go and get the grizzlies.
They'll just squeeze you until you pop like a zit.
Stevie motioned to the wedding planner to close the doors leading into the wedding venue. And once she heard those doors close, Stevie grabbed the gun she knew Dutch had holstered under his jacket. Even better, it already had a silencer on it. She aimed and shot Damian Miller 5 times in the chest, which did nothing, really, except redirect his focus from finding the honey badger who'd ripped him off to destroying the honey badger who'd fucked up his nice white English suit. The bear roared, and Stevie tossed the gun back to a stunned Dutch.
Run! She told Max's best friend. Run away!
Then that's exactly what she did. Charlie caught up to her father near the lobby and threw herself at him, landing on his back and taking them both down to the ground. They rolled right into the middle of people trying to walk to the nearby stores or to the elevators, but Charlie didn't care. Grabbing her father by the hair, she yanked him onto his back and straddled his chest. She had just leaned in to start asking him questions when she felt she was being watched. She looked up to see Bo Novikov standing over her with one child on his shoulders, another in his arms. Beside him was a tall black woman holding onto a baby.
Seriously, though, Novikov said, I can teach you and your sister to skate. That's, like, the easiest part.
What?
Hockey. I can teach you to play hockey.
Charlie started to say something, but her father was trying to get out from under her. She punched the idiot in the face 3 times before looking back up at Novikov. Can this wait?
You're not getting any younger.
Bo, the woman said. Later. You can talk to her later.
Whatever.
He sighed, walked off. The woman smiled warmly, pressing her hand to her chest and said,
I don't care. Could you go?
Charlie barked. Looking hurt, the woman walked off, but Charlie wasn't too concerned. She had other issues at the moment.
Help! Her father suddenly yelled. She's trying to kill me!
They both waited, but everyone kept moving except for a couple of teenagers who started filming on their phones.
Seriously, Dad, Charlie told him, if you're going to try that move, you really need to pick another city.
Max was crawling through the air ducts, moving fast, but sadly not really knowing where she was going.
Exactly.
Still, she didn't expect the bottom to go out from under her. Literally. The hatch opened and Max fell to the floor. She turned over, swinging her fists, her eyes closed. But when she didn't actually hit anything, she looked up and saw... Dutch and Stevie?
Told you I smelled her,
Dutch told Stevie proudly.
That's just weird, Stevie replied. I'd appreciate you not saying something like that to me ever again.
Dutch held his hand out and Max reached to grab it, but then Dutch was gone, picked up and flung across the room by Carrie's polar bear dupe. He reached down for Max, but she grabbed another knife from her holster and slashed. The bear roared, his severed thumb hitting Stevie in the head before bouncing across the room. Another polar grabbed Max from behind, but Stevie unleashed her ridiculously sized claws and slashed, tearing a massive amount of flesh and muscle from a shoulder. That bear roared in pain and dropped Max. Now on her feet, Max used her elbow to push her sister toward another door, since her claws were still out. And together they ran, the bears right behind them. Charlie's father was turning blue by the time Berg was able to pry her hands from around his throat, and Ag was able to yank her off,
Freddy rolled to his knees, coughing and taking in big gulps of air. It was quite dramatic, until he suddenly grabbed Stevie's pink and burgundy backpack and tried to make a run for it. But Britta caught him around the neck Charlie had tried to wring and dragged him away from the lobby. Berg took a cursing and hissing Charlie from a terrified Dag, and they followed Britta down the hallway. They moved into a room that wasn't near the wedding festivities and carried the two McKilligans inside. Dag kicked the door closed and Britta pressed her .45 under Freddy's chin. And before he could speak a word, she said, "Keep in mind, old man, I am not your child. I do not like you, and no one in your family will miss you." Charlie fought her way out of Berg's arms and adjusted her dress. "You should have let me kill him," she said to Berg without looking at him.
"You were being filmed. I'm pretty sure that's one of those situations you can't McKilligan your way out of."
Charlie took in a breath, let it out. "You're right. Thank you." She pointed at her father. "Why did you take Stevie's backpack?" Her father gave a shrug and false smile.
"No reason."
Charlie's fingers curled into fists, and after a few seconds, she said, "Dag, rip off his arm." Dag started across the room like he was going to do it, and Britta even forced Freddy to extend a limb. When his brother grabbed hold of it and looked like he was going to start pulling while his sister held the other half of Freddy, the badger screamed out, "Okay, okay." Charlie cocked her head.
"Well, I needed one of the notebooks."
"Tell me you're not trying to sell secrets to the North Koreans again." Britta's eyes widened.
"Again?"
"He never actually did," Charlie explained. "It's just that, she shook her head. "I'm sorry, it's too stupid a story."
"It's nothing like that. I just,
When Freddy hesitated too long, Charlie informed her father, "If you think that I won't tear strips of your flesh off just to see you cry, let alone get information that will protect my baby sister, you are sadly mistaken. So if I were you, Dad, I'd start talking." But even after that, he still hesitated. Berg pushed Charlie to the side, got at the head of the long, heavy wood conference table, raised his fist in the air, and brought it down. Once. The entire table caved inward, folding like a thin sheet of cardboard. Berg lowered his head a little so that he was sure Freddy McKilligan could see his grizzly hump. Then he said,
"Talk." "It's account numbers,"
the badger quickly replied. "Account numbers 4, Charlie pushed.
"Every member of the McKilligan family in Scotland and in the States."
Aghast, Charlie demanded, "How the fuck did you get that?"
"I just..."
Freddy's gaze bounced around the room, examining them all before he told his daughter,
"You don't have to worry. I don't have yours and your sister's, since you won't give me that information. Spoiled brats that you are."
"Seriously?" Britta snapped, pissed for the McKilligan sisters.
"They're my daughters. They wouldn't exist if it wasn't for me."
Charlie started to go for her father, but Berg caught her arm and pulled her back.
"Just finish," he ordered Freddy. "Anyway, I sold Will's info to the Weras to prove what I had."
"Uh-huh. And?" Charlie pushed.
"But then Will got so mad about it."
"Shocking," Charlie dryly replied.
"He owes me," her father yelled. "Fucking cheap ass."
"Can we just keep going, please?"
"So I wasn't going to sell the book to the Weras since Will was all bitchy about it. But then they..."
"Then they..." He cleared his throat.
"Then they got me drunk one night, and I must have told them where it was, or how they could get it."
"How could they get it?"
"Well, I know your sister likes to write in those composition notebooks. So I just bought one, put the info in there, and then slipped it into the middle of the stack she already had in her backpack. I figured she'd never notice."
Without moving, without blinking, Charlie asked her father, "And when was this?" He shrugged.
"I don't know. A month ago, maybe."
You let your daughter walk around for a month with a target on her back?"
"I wouldn't put it that way."
Her voice tight, Charlie asked, "And how would you put it?"
Well, I guess kind of that way. But
he quickly added. I knew my little Stevie wouldn't mind.
The problem wasn't Freddy's little Stevie. It was Freddy's extremely upset Charlie. Bodies so tense that every vein bulged, Charlie reached down and grabbed one side of the table that Berg had broken in half. Britta and Dag, eyes wide, immediately dove out of the way as that table half flew across the room and rammed into Freddy McKilligan, battering him into the wall. When the table hit the floor, a brutalized and unconscious Freddy fell on top of it. Calm again, Charlie went over to her father's side and grabbed her sister's backpack. She dumped everything on the floor and quickly pulled out the notebooks. She handed a couple to Britta, Berg, and Dag. She took the rest. In silence, they all quickly flipped through the pages until Britta said, All I see are notes for things that I'm not sure are physically possible to make in today's world.
These are all music and drawings, Dag said.
When Charlie looked at him, Berg just shook his head.
Someone else must have taken it.
Who? Charlie thought a moment, but when she suddenly closed her eyes and whispered, Fuck. He knew they were in trouble.
Come on, then, aunties, Mary said as she pulled the Wera twins up, tucking the notebook the two women wanted into the pack before strapping it to her shoulders. Let's get you out of here.
My face, one of them sobbed. Look what that bitch did to my face.
Mary understood why her cousin had done it, though. She'd wanted to do something similar, just so she could tell the two bitches apart.
It's all right. No need to worry. You'll be better in no time. Plastic surgeons can do wonders these days, she lied.
Those weren't just scratches. Her cousin had dug down deep with her claws. To bone. Those were scars that would last, even for shifters. She led them to the door, stepping over the bodies of the men she'd been forced to kill. Her cousin had only taken out one. Mary had killed the others because they'd seen too much. She'd walked in when they were talking about claws and fangs. Not a good scenario in her estimation. Best to quiet them all. So she had. She'd killed every man and hadn't even worked up a sweat. Full humans were almost too easy.
Let's get you someplace safe, aunties. And then, she said as she helped them out, we'll have a nice, long talk about family. And how we're different from the other boys and girls.
They led the bears as far away from the wedding as they could, but when they turned to make sure they were all back there, Stevie realized that only Miller's polar friends had been chasing them. Miller was gone.
Max!
Max stopped and turned, quickly realizing the issue. They were at a dead end, with the bears only a few feet away from them. One of them threw his arms wide and asked,
So what are you gonna do now?
Max reached under the slit in her dress and pulled out two blades. She started toward the men, but Stevie yanked her back.
No, why not? Max snapped. It's wrong.
And what? You think they were going to be nice to us?
We don't know if they were going to kill us, though, right?
She asked the men, but they just seemed sadly confused by the situation.
Look at them. You can't just kill them.
And I still say, why not?
What about the bodies?
Now Max was getting frustrated.
What about them?
We can't just leave them here. The cops will come. It'll ruin the wedding.
The wedding?
Look, we want to stay in New York, right? So Charlie can have a chance at what some consider normalcy. Then we can't leave bodies just lying around everywhere.
So what do you suggest?
Stevie studied the hallway they were in, her mind calculating every bit of space, noting anything within arm's length, taking into account every defect in the design and architecture before evaluating those things within three dimensions inside her mind. When she was done, she took one of Max's blades, walked over to the wall on the right, found the patch she wanted, and stabbed it with the knife. There was a moment of silence before the wall began to crack. The crack spread fast, crawling up the wall to the ceiling. The bears were staring up as the crack moved by, a second before nearly 5 feet of ceiling gave way and fell on them. Stevie pulled Max's knife out of the wall and handed it back to her. Then she smiled.
Show off,
Max muttered before she ran around the bears, who were groaning and trying to dig their way out of the rubble. Barb Malone stood behind the tapestry that separated the prep area from the actual ceremony. Everything was going perfectly. She could see her staff on her tablet as they rushed to get those last-minute details finished in the grand ballroom for the reception. She'd been reluctant to move away from her paper and pen days, but high-tech was her friend, an extra set of hands that she'd never really had before. Glorious. Just glorious.
"We are winding down here," she said very softly into her mic. "You have T-minus 5 minutes before the ceremony is over. Be ready. Be smiling."
To her delight, she heard that the cake had arrived, and it was perfect. The cake always worried her. If that thing was damaged during transport, a bride would forever say her wedding was ruined by the cake disaster. So Barb only worked with certain bakers and bakeries. She wouldn't tolerate mistakes. Not now, not ever. She was about to move back to the front of the room when she saw a polar bear come in through one of the doors and start moving toward the ceremony. Barb quickly and quietly moved across the floor until she stood in front of the man. Why was blood on him? She shook her head. No time for those kind of questions.
"I'm sorry, sir," she whispered, "but you can't be back here."
He tried to push her out of the way, but Barb Malone was a Siberian tiger. You didn't push her anywhere. She unleashed her fangs, and he started to roar. A roar that would travel. But then two of the bride's cousins were suddenly there, throwing themselves onto the back of the bear, trying to stop him and, thankfully, distracting the polar from roaring. Unfortunately for the two cousins, they were honey badgers. Honey badgers on a polar bear? Seriously?
"This wouldn't be so bad if I could use my knife,"
one cousin complained, too loudly.
"I said no,"
the other barked back.
"Keep quiet," Barb ordered.
A muffled scream startled Barb, but a wolverine landing on the bear's back startled her more. What the unholy fuck was happening?
"Dutch, get him," one cousin squealed.
"I'm trying."
Charlie couldn't find any sign of the Wera twins or Mary, and she really didn't have time to look. She had to check on the damn wedding. She eased the door open and slid into the back with the Dunn triplets behind her. She just let out a relieved breath, seeing the bride and groom about to take their vows, when she noticed the tapestry in the background was moving. Then she heard a squeak. She knew only one shifter who ever squeaked like that. Stevie. She motioned to Berg to keep a lookout for trouble before lifting her skirt and moving around the perimeter of the room until she reached the tapestry and disappeared behind it. Charlie was trying to be quiet, but she gasped when she saw Stevie and Max hanging onto a polar bear wearing a blood-soaked white suit and desperate to shake them off. Coming around to the front was Dutch. He grabbed the bear around the waist and was using all of his brawny weasel strength to try to take the bear down to the ground, but Miller wasn't having any of it. Charlie ran toward the bear just as he opened his mouth to roar. She slapped her hand over his face and started pushing him back with Dutch.
"Get him out of here!"
the she-tiger wedding planner whisper yelled at them. The bear tried to go forward again, ready to ruin everything for a couple Charlie really could not give two shits about. But still, she'd been paid to prevent something like this from happening. Sadly, she still felt a sense of commitment. But just when the bear managed to get within inches of the tapestry, his hand reaching down to pull it off and reveal all of this to the rich, full humans about to marry into this insanity, a big hand caught hold of the polar bear's wrist and yanked him back. Max and Stevie were quickly removed from the polar's back, and Dag wrapped his arms around the polar, slapping his hand over Miller's mouth. Then there was Britta. Standing in front of the polar, smirking, she reached down and grabbed Miller's balls. Then she twisted. His high-pitched squeal, despite Dag's hand over his mouth, still made every shifter in the place wince, but the full humans probably hadn't heard a thing. "Let's go," Britta ordered, and as one, the Duns lifted the polar up and carried him out.
Just as the door closed behind them, Charlie heard applause and cheers and knew that the bride and groom were now wife and husband. Grinning, she looked at her sisters, and together they all did their own little awkward celebratory dances. Charlie knew it wasn't pretty, but she also didn't care. Chapter 32. Their table at the reception ended up being all the way in the back, by the kitchen doors. But Charlie still didn't care. How could she when she was just relieved the worst of it was over? Carrie, for once, had taken someone's advice other than her own and had nailed her husband almost immediately after the ceremony. A good thing, because 4 hours later, after the toast had been made, the dinner served, and the cake cut, Damian Miller had shown up again with his thumb reattached. Shifter surgeons could do amazing work, and his rage unhampered by all the pain meds he was on. He slurred his way through accusations of whoring and thievery, but he was such a mess that Ronald Farmington and the Farmington family didn't believe a word of it. Eventually, the intruder passed out, and he was dragged from the room by the wedding planner's security detail. Charlie doubted it was over. Multi-millions had been stolen from that bear. But her involvement in all of it sure was. She looked out over the dance floor and watched Max and Dutch tango from one corner to the other. Charlie winced at the bandages easily visible on her sister due to the cut of her dress. Shot in the back, and Max refused to go home to get some rest. Even worse, she'd let Dutch, of all people, yank out the bullets before the area was cleaned and bandages taped over the wounds. Charlie sighed and focused on the slice of honey cake a waiter had placed in front of her. Berg came back to the table, and lifting Charlie up, sat in her chair and then put her on his lap. "Is this a thing we do?" she asked.
"It is now."
He gave her a short but warm hug. She liked it.
"You all right?"
he asked. "I'm fine. Did you see them?"
"Nope. If the twins and your cousin were here, they're gone. I did touch base with Rick Van Holtz. He said that Malone and Smith are on their way to Italy, trying to find them."
"According to Max, they know what they are now. This kind of changes everything."
"How? It's not like it's going to make them meaner."
She shrugged. "You have a point."
"Oh, and your father disappeared."
"Of course he did." She rolled her eyes. "Whatever." Although she still wondered how the old bastard had gotten everyone's bank account information. Even worse, he hadn't bragged about how he'd done it. He bragged about everything, which meant he was hiding something big. Or disastrous. And that worried her more than anything. Dutch and Max tangoed over to them, and Max dipped Dutch so that his head was almost in Charlie's lap.
"Still hate me?"
Dutch asked. "Forever and ever." "What's wrong?" Max asked before bringing Dutch up and twirling him away. She dropped into a seat and motioned to one of the waitstaff. She pointed at each of them and asked, "Beer? Beer? 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 4 beers, she told the waiter. Once the waiter was gone, Max asked, "So what's up?" "Dad's gone." "Of course he is. Although I have to admit, I was impressed you threw half a table at him."
"It was awesome,"
Berg said, burying his nose against the back of Charlie's neck. "He just made me so mad."
"I understand that,"
Berg said, squeezing Charlie a little tighter.
"There is something about your father that just makes you want to punch him."
Bernice stopped by on her way to more drunken schmoozing, repeatedly pointing her finger at Charlie before telling her, "Nice job, pretty girl." "Thank you." "Can I pay you tonight?" Charlie insisted. "You promised. The rest of the money tonight, including the bonus." Bernice quickly held up her hands, but stumbled a little in the process.
"Not a problem. My husband has the cash. I'll send him up to get it for you."
When she'd walked away, Berg asked,
"You going to tell her about the account numbers situation?"
"After we get paid, I'll tell her and Will. Not before. Especially since we don't know how much longer she'll have access to ready cash," Max muttered, smirking at Dutch. Stevie came back to the table and dropped into a chair.
Dutch motioned to his lap, and she kicked off her shoes and placed her feet there. Dutch was smart enough, though, not to actually rub her feet. That she hated. Stevie looked around the room and admitted,
"I'm so bored here."
She leaned in a bit and whispered,
"Our party last night was so much better."
"It really was," Max agreed. "Of course, we had zebra legs." Charlie laughed, and Stevie held up her phone.
"So I got a call from the CERN director. I think he cried a little."
"You're making the world of science very sad," Charlie told her sister.
"I'm not giving up science. I am science."
"I really don't think you should be hanging around that Kyle kid," Max warned. "You need a job, though," Charlie said, pointing at Stevie. "Somewhere, somehow. I don't give a shit. But you cannot just sit around the house doing nothing. We all know that leads to obsessing and possible hoarding."
"I'm well aware of my mental health issues. I've got it all under control."
"You're not going back to Switzerland?"
Berg asked Stevie.
"Nope. I already talked to Tiny, and he says he'd be more than happy for us to stay."
"Considering what he's charging us,
he's willing to work on a deal for the rent if we sign a lease and you continue to make him your honey pineapple cake."
"You promised him."
"I said we'd talk about it. Didn't I, Max?"
Max looked at her sister and admitted, "I'm sorry. I wasn't listening because you're boring the fuck out of me." Stevie's eyes narrowed, but before she could say anything, Max took off running, and Stevie charged after her.
"Fun is fun," Charlie yelled after her sisters, "until someone gets hurt."
Charlie cringed when Max slipped in her heels and flipped herself over one of the open bars and into the liquor bottles, sending glass crashing to the floor and knocking the bartender out cold. Dutch pushed his chair back.
"I'll deal with it,"
he said before Charlie could start yelling at everyone. Embarrassed, she couldn't even look at Berg. He was probably checking for one of the 7 exits she'd noticed and marked in her head in case of emergency. Not that she'd blame the man. Berg tried to calm his mind, because he knew if Stevie wasn't leaving New York, then Charlie wouldn't leave, which meant she would stay. In New York. With him.
"Don't get too excited,"
he warned himself. He didn't want to scare Charlie off.
"Don't say anything that will spook her. Just keep calm and—"
"Are you going to say anything?" she suddenly barked at him, making Berg jump.
"Say anything about what?"
She gestured across the room, and that's when he noticed Max was covered in cuts and, apparently, liquor. She was also laughing hysterically along with Dutch while a tisk-tisking Stevie was trying to help the bartender, and the wedding planner was ordering the waitstaff into action and yelling at the badgers who'd caused a scene.
"What am I looking at?"
he asked, confused. "You didn't notice all that?"
"Notice all what?"
She turned to the side, her butt still on his lap, so she could look him in the face.
"You're not embarrassed?"
"By what?"
"By what I affectionately call my family. I mean, look at them over there."
Max had gotten poor Stevie into a headlock, which was doing nothing but pissing Stevie off. But all Berg could do was shrug.
"My sister grabbed the nuts of a polar bear and twisted until he squealed like an otter caught in a hunting trap. You haven't even met my parents yet."
Berg suddenly looked off and said,
"Oh, God, you'll have to meet my parents."
"So?"
"They're going to embarrass me. And Dag. And Britta." "Oh, Britta. She's not going to be happy."
"Berg?"
"Yes?"
"Have your parents ever sold you into indentured servitude?"
"No."
"Then I don't think you have to worry about me judging them."
"And you're staying?"
The question was out of his mouth before he could stop it. He hadn't meant to ask her so directly. "Stevie wants to stay. I don't know what Max is doing, but that's nothing new."
"But you're staying?"
"I have to. I have to bake food for Tiny." Realizing she wasn't getting what he was asking her, Berg just closed his eyes and came out with it.
"I love you, and I want you to stay."
Charlie let out an annoyed sigh. "Well, that's all on you."
Eyes snapping open, Berg demanded, "What the hell does that mean? You don't love me?"
"Of course I love you." She glared.